It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock from the BEA Beautiful Studios of Freedoms, with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona. Today, another great show as always for you because I love you so much. What we got today is gentleman Bo Grosskopf. Now, Bo is a professor of international relations at California State University, Chico. Now, what he has done is he has written a book, Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. This is why this is important. As we have just a big, giant Dresden fire bombing, nuking of civilian population, whatever, World War II, and now, well, that's not going over well. I mean, you know, after, heaven forbid, people have iPhones, you know, they go up to YouTube, start putting up the carnage that is associated with war on civilian populations. What do they need to do? We need to get more strategic, more surgical. You know, we need to get more, you know, that we can drop a bomb down a chimney and it's okay. You know, we just take out a wedding, get the bad guy. We only got 30 or 40 people dead and with a whole bunch of relatives that are mad. And see, I think we created a whole bunch more terrorists, almost as if it was on purpose. Well, now we have helicopter gunships going around. We got WikiLeaks out there saying, hey, you know, let me show you. What, like this was an isolated incident? We know better than that. Well, Bo Grosskopf sure as heck does. Wrote a book about it. I got you there, Bo.
Yes, you do, Ernest.
You know, Bo, I'm really glad to have you on the show. We've had you on Charles' show before, and I'm familiar with your work, and I was really looking forward to talking to you about this book because I can understand where you're going with this. Who's the real terrorist in this? And does it create more terrorists? I'm wondering what is the politics and the reasoning behind going into foreign lands that we occupy and just bombing the living snot out of a population. Go ahead and give me your spiel on it, man.
Well, to answer your first question, which was who's the terrorist, I think that we've been given a partial picture on who the terrorists are. It's always the other folks. And I've documented through this book on the development of strategic bombing theory, which is probably more familiar to your audience, known as shock and awe, which was the language used to in the opening weeks of the invasion of Iraq in 2003, where we bombed major cities of Iraq, particularly Baghdad, as a way of undermining the political will of the people. And you do that by, of course, so the theory goes, by targeting the infrastructure, the electrical grids, the transportation systems, even hospitals and even marketplaces, and you'll force the population to rise up against the, in this case, the dictator Saddam Hussein, and surrender easily. And this is the theory. It is what's developed at the end of World War One with the advent of the age of aviation, when the question was raised, can air power alone win wars? And the four prophets said, yes, they can, one of them being Billy Mitchell, who's the godfather of our Air Force. And it's a strategy that basically says if you bomb the civilians of the major cities, you'll force a lot of refugees, and they'll go to the next city, and then you bomb that city. And eventually, because you're bombing civilians, by whom we mean women and children, and the assumption is they don't have the same political will to resist the reign of terror that's coming from the skies as the soldiers do, that eventually they will force, quickly they will force the government to surrender. And
has that ever happened?
It hasn't ever happened, no.
Ever happened?
It has never happened. In fact, the bombing of civilian centers has proven time and time again, particularly beginning with World War II, when the theory was really put into practice first by the British and then by the United States, that it simply reinforce the will to resist of the civilian population.
You know, a lot of times I get the impression that the reason they continue this policy is because if they don't, then they have to leave without having a total, you know, their jackboot on the throat of that country saying we win, then they didn't win. They're going to have them come after them for war crimes. And they're like, oh, heck no, we got to have an utter capitulation of and install a government that says, yes, thanks for freeing us or something. I mean, I don't understand, other than these wars are not meant to be won. They're just meant to be fought. It's just a continuation of and creating more terrorists and knowing this. I'm trying to wrap my mind around what the real end game is here, because it's obvious whatever the heck they're doing is not working. It's not producing anything that they promised. It's not diminishing the number of terrorists. It increases people that, you know, want to do us harm. And then they go, see, people want to harm us. I'm going, you think? So I'm wondering what is the real justification for them doing this. Helen Thomas asked this question in the White House correspondence pool there, and all of a sudden she's asked to leave. You're not allowed no more. And then of course she came back. But she's going, what's the real reason? Do you have any idea what that might be?
Well, I have answers to a couple of your questions. One is that are they afraid that this will be eventually documented as war crimes? And the answer is yes. The fact is they were so concerned after World War II that in setting up the Geneva Conventions, they decided that the aerial bombardment was not a war crime and that they weren't going to charge the Germans with it, and therefore they couldn't charge themselves with it. So that's one way that they escaped and documented that, yeah, they are worried about it. The reason they keep doing it is because they have a ready excuse as to why it hasn't worked, and that excuse is that the politicians have gotten in the way, and if they would simply allow us to blast away and do what we wanted to do, as Curtis LeMay said in Vietnam over the Vietnam question and over the Korean War situation, if they allowed us to do without any kind of political restraint, then we could win the war very quickly. As he said, in 12 days, he could have won the Vietnam War. Because the politicians get in the way, and we've never been able to apply the theory and the strategy adequately to win a war.
Okay, definition, win the war. Of course, you can take nukes and just, you know, glaze over the desert and have a nice thin film of glass and go and build parking lots on it or something. I mean, but, you know, win what? I mean, I don't understand. What is it they mean by win?
Well, from their vantage point, according to the theory, is that if they are allowed to bomb away for a shorter period of time, that they can undermine the civilian population's will to resist, and they will force the government to surrender without all the carnage. But more importantly to them is the fact that the people who are being killed are not the warrior class. They're not the most valuable members of society, as they term it, and it's just civilians. And, you know, by definition, the war will end quickly. And they do talk about it as being a moral way to fight war, or a less amoral way of fighting war.
No,
what they're locked into is what's called the technological fix. That is, we can use our fancy technology, our ever-evolving technology, to fight clean wars. Of course, it's very clean for the people dropping the bombs. It's pretty dirty on the ground.
Yeah, no, it's just puffs of smoke. We had a speaker at the Freedom Summit years ago. I remember him saying this, right? It was 3 weeks after 9/11. He said, you watch what's going to happen. It is going to be the mentality of the bombers in World War II. It's going to be all they see is little puffs of smoke. They are not on the ground and seeing the blown apart bodies and have a 13-year-old kid sitting there seeing his family blown up against the brick walls and everything, and to think that it's – how much of a step is it for him to strap on some dynamite and go into a marketplace and push the trigger? And I'm going, are they stupid or are they evil? Or they got another agenda? I mean, you've been studying this. I mean, you got to shed some light on this for me. What is their motivation? I don't get it.
Well, their motivation as the military officers and politicians who are prosecuting wars is to do what they call win. I mean, that's pretty simple. You don't fight wars to lose or to tie. You fight them to win.
Win what?
Well, that's the point. And they're worried. Like, for example, this counterinsurgency strategy that they're using in Iraq and now in Afghanistan, the military officers are worried about all the civilians who are being killed in the bombing raids in Afghanistan, because they know that in order to win, by which they mean bring stability to Afghanistan, a pro-U.S. government in
Afghanistan,
that they are going to have to, you know, win the hearts and minds of the Afghan people. And they are worried that they have expressed their worry about killing of civilians through this counterinsurgency strategy that depends heavily on air power, that they're going to lose the population. So what you say about creating more terrorists, you know, this is what other people talk about as blowback, and you're absolutely right.
Oh, and
but
it's
again,
not
they
hard.
Have, they have this arrogance about them that thinks that eventually, being superior, using superior firepower, they will do whatever they define as a win.
I don't know what evidence they're pulling from to make that, come up with that conclusion. I don't see where that's coming from. I don't see. But, you know, we're going to talk about it more with Bo Grosskopf in his book, Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment, and what it has really produced. And are we safer or not? Think about it. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Me, Ernest Hancock. Oh, sorry about that. I had to have a button to push. Now, one thing that I want to make sure that we do with Bo Grosskopf is make sure that we walk this through. Because not only do we need facts, not only do we need to have the ability to understand what's being done, and even more than, you know, why it's being done, but the result of it being done, these little puffs of smoke all around the world. Now they got to the point where they get these pimple-faced kids in Langley sitting there with a joystick sending Predator drones and Hellfire missiles in the weddings. What the heck did you think was going to happen? You're going to create what? Collateral damage? It's collateral dead body parts. Where do they come up with this verbiage and stuff? You know, that's another thing, Bo. Do you have like a list of all these nice, neat little phrases that they come up with to hide what they're doing?
I do, and it's called war speak. So, for example, when we don't drop bombs. We fly sorties. We provide air support. We visit a site. We do kinetic targeting. We drop force packages. We drop vertically deployed anti-personnel devices. We talk about collateral damage. The new language is regrettable and treated byproducts of the war on terror. The phrase incontinent ordnance delivery means that a bomb missed its target. Regrettable byproducts, death and destruction. Targets are hard and soft assets. They are not destroyed, but they are visited, acquired, taken out, serviced, or suppressed. Weapons do not kill. They eliminate, neutralize, degrade, cleanse, attrit, or terminate with extreme prejudice. It's no wonder that both the people of flying the airplanes and dropping the bombs and the people back home don't know what death and destruction is all about. It's pretty dirty on the ground, and the people in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere know it. And yet we are cleansed from it by this language.
Man, I softball you that one or what?
Yes, you did. I was ready for that one.
I guess there is a language.
Well, I talk about how the U.S. Has been effective at dodging the terrorism label, and that's a part of it. Is this language that soothes the conscience of our military, and also by definition disguises actually what's happening on the ground.
You know, I'd love to include that text in with the archive of today's show. Is there somewhere online that you have that we can just pull that?
I will find it for you.
Yeah, you send me the email of that, publisher@freedomsphoenix.com or whatever we communicated with you with, and you send that to me, and I'll include it in today. I mean, people need to know this. You know, this is excellent information, because you're right. We hear all these phrases that are kind of, you know, washed and euphemized, that they're just, you know, bleh. And I go, whoa, does any of those say anything about, you know, dead baby body parts all over the place? Where's that part? I don't see that part.
Well, can you imagine, Ernest, if someone talked about the victims of 9/11 as collateral damage, or someone talked about the victims of 9/11 as regrettable attrited byproducts of the war on terror? I mean, really, people would get up in arms.
All right, I'll cut through it right here. Let me ask you this. The peace movement, I mean, the anti-war movement, or whatever, all right, give me 30 seconds here. Here we go. I've been following this since forever. Heck, I started in radio in February of 2003 with the support of people. The reason was is get a libertarian up there that will just, you know, define what this war thing is. We're going to go to war. And there you have no idea. They're going to sugarcoat this. And I go, I guarantee you, I had Tony Snow on, Sam Donaldson, G. Gordon Liddy in studio. We're just hammering on this thing. And I'm going, look, let me tell you what I know. There's going to be a Marine with his boot up on the rubble carrying an American flag in Baghdad saying we win, and then the war starts. All this, you know, we get to go in, we make Baghdad thing, all sugarcoating. Because all this is about is getting the support of people to be enslaved. They have to volunteer, okay, well, you win, and I guess we'll just do what you're told, what we're told. That's not going to happen. That is not going to happen. So I'm going, okay. So here comes the anti-war with the Kerry campaign against www.warmonger.com. Okay, so he's in there going, we're gonna go ahead and war and war, and we can't finish. Then you have Kerry, I don't even know what his message kind of sort of was, and it would have been continued anyway. And you saw the anti-war movement going into Crawford, Texas, Cindy Sheehan there, MoveOn's got them all collected in their nice little basket, and they say, yeah, we got the anti-war movement. And they say, Cindy, we want you to say phased withdrawal, not immediate withdrawal. Nope, not going to do it. Boom, we're pulling support from you. Then here comes Obama. Obama, yeah, and it was so stark in the Republican conventions, debates, that they were so, we got a bloodthirsty, kill, everybody, nuke them all, not, nuclear option not off the table, we're going to go. And it was so bad, except for Dr. Paul, that you look at it and you go, all the Democrats have to do is say they're not going to nuke China, and they get the peace vote. Heck, if they say they're not going to nuke India as well, well, they'll get the Nobel Peace Prize. I actually wrote that. And then what do we get? Obama gets the Peace Prize. Are we freaking kidding? So I'm going, where did the anti-war movement go? It was controlled by, you go high enough up on the pyramid, it's the same people in charge of both sides. They had controlled opposition. The anti-war movement is gone, except in, the real people, the grassroots, the libertarians and so on. And they even trying to take over there too. So I'm looking at it and I'm going, all right, here comes Obama. He wins on this peace thing. How's that peace thing been working out? We're expanding in Yemen and Pakistan and Afghanistan. I'm going, whoa, freaking time out. So I'm looking at Bo Grosskopf doing all this research. Certainly you were being utilized by us. I was using a lot of your information. We had you on the radio. We're going, hey, man, here it comes. Now we have Obama in there. Who do we look to champion peace? Where do we go for that? Who is behind this? What is the main thrust that's taken over both sides? And what is your take on it, Bo?
Well, I talk a lot about in classes and elsewhere about the development of what's called the national security state. And if you think about it, the president, who is the commander-in-chief by constitutional means, is the head of the democratic state, but he's also a head of this new national security state, which Eisenhower warned us about, the military-industrial complex. And if you look during the campaign, and I look very carefully at the advisors to Obama and even the advisors to Clinton, the Democratic Party candidates until he was selected, they are all warmongers. They're all people who are very much in step with the notion of an empire, building an empire, sustaining an empire, using the instruments of war to sustain that empire. So there really wasn't any dissent on the issues of foreign policy except at the level that you have talked about in terms of the degree of dissent or the degree of difference, except for an anti-war candidate like Paul was. That's a very curious thing coming from Republican circles, quite frankly. So they are locked into, the president is locked into this national security state, and they have an imperial mentality, and they think that the technological advantage that we have can allow us to fight and win wars easily. I mean, that's
okay. Now I'm telling you, you say he's locked into it. It didn't walked into it that way. He was that way from the beginning. Any of us that were paying real attention to who they were associating with, we knew what was going to happen. And I'm going, heck, even kept Gates. I mean, the Secretary of Defense, what the heck does that tell you? So I'm going, you know, why is it that this was so oblivious to the left? I mean, they were just hoping? I mean, was it hope for change? Hope? I mean, what was it?
Yeah, I do. I think that's, you put your finger on it, that there was some hope for change. I think people on the progressive side of politics in America understood, and that's why they were a little queasy about Obama, because remember, Obama didn't say he was anti-war. He said that fighting the war in Iraq was the wrong place to conduct the war on terror. Well, we find out that what he said was in fact true, that was his true feeling, so he's shifting it elsewhere, as you've documented. But, you know, basically, it was hope, the hope that somebody would be fundamentally different from Cheney Bush.
You know, you got to keep hope alive, keep hope alive. Well, it's not hope alive anymore, it's hope dead. You know, these guys are hoping for death, dying, and destruction. And I still don't understand clearly why. There's something else going on. We're going to try and find out when we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
It just ain't the same. Always you change. New days are strange. Is the world insane? If love and peace is so strong, why are the pieces of love that don't belong? Nations dropping bombs. Chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering. As the youth are young, so ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I could ask myself, really, what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of the negatives. Not respecting each other, denying thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Come on,
I don't know.
What's the truth, y'all? Come on,
I don't know.
What's the love, y'all?
Yeah, the love is right here. I declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and Bo Grosskopf doing our best to make sure people understand what the heck is going on. And all you got to do is ask yourself a simple question. Where is the love? Is it in the party here, the party there, the left jackboot or the right jackboot or the jackboot on your throat party? Is that where it's at? You know, you gotta help me out here. I mean, you can write all you want about all the stuff, all the evil that they're doing, all the things that are happening, how damaged people are, how much it creates more terrorism, how we have all these people hating us and all of the stuff and the financial aspect and all this. And I have to ask, what is going on? How, and it's only allowed because we allow it. There's some kind of propaganda beating, you know, too much something in the water, something. I mean, what allows us to perpetuate? I mean, you got to be asking yourself that question.
No, I've asked myself that question, and I tried to give some answers to it. One of them is, the process that we all go through, which is the process of political socialization. And I'll just give you a very clear example that. You know, when we look, you know, they've been very, very, very successful at convincing us that, you know, we have the moral high ground, that we're the best people in the world, and that we don't do anything wrong. I mean, when you ask yourself, well, what was the explanation for 9/11 that the Bush administration gave out? It's because the other people are jealous of what we have. But, you know, so we're so convinced that if there was such a thing as a national mirror that we could look at a reflection of ourselves, what we would see, we'd be convinced we would see and should see, is basically Prince Valiant and Snow White, you know. And so we have a distorted image of what we do in the world, and by definition, as long as they can convince the people and have monopoly over that distorted image, by why should they change? I mean,
well,
because they've been given license to do whatever they want to do.
I'm telling you, we saw it change in the last couple of years. I don't know if you know, I'm the one that came up with the Ron Paul Revolution logo. I went all over the country teaching young people how to express themselves on bridges, overpasses on the internet. I mean, go. The answer was always yes. Go, go. It's Loveolution. Because I knew what was going to happen. That logo came from an 06 campaign that I had here in Arizona. And it was already vetted. I knew how popular it was because people love freedom. They want a total revolution, but they want to do it with love. They put the daisies in the gum barrels. They understand that you can't go forcing your will on people and all of a sudden they're going to see the light. You know, it's sharing the love. Where is the love? And I'm telling you, they have to beat it out of us in order to do this. And that's why it was great movies that we cover on here, Sir No Sir, how the GIs really stopped the Vietnam War by refusing to fight it. When you got the Pentagon reporting 4,000 or 5,000 killed officers by their own men, because we're not going out tomorrow. Guess what? Boom, done. Then you have the U.S. versus John Lennon, where he's out going, war is over if you want it. The entire worldwide propaganda he's doing against the man by putting billboards up all over the place saying, look, the war's over. All you got to do is just want it. He's a big threat enemy of the state. It's a psyop. This whole thing is trying to turn us into batteries for the machine. It's like the Matrix. And I'm telling you, the only counter to this is exactly what you're doing, is telling people what this really produces. And it's not even, I don't even advocate we try and even change them. Screw them. You know, I'm tired of trying even worrying about them. Change us, that we know that they do not represent us, and that the entire world knows that we are not this government thing. Hey man, they're doing that. It's not me, it's not you, it's not a lot of people. And as soon as we make that clear to everyone, their support goes away, and they sit there and they can pound all they want on Fox News and CNN and MSNBC, because they all support the same thing. And what happens is all of a sudden you find out that they're, of all of them put together, 3 million viewers do not stack up against 300 million people in this country, where the vast majority of them saying, I call BS on everything. And they're doing everything they can to keep the damage, even to our own soldiers, our own culture, our own budget, away from the American people. But with the internet and these young people that have the ability to hit the truth button, to peer review amongst themselves what's really going on, I see it every single day. And the next hour, we're going to be talking about the Southern Republican Leadership Conference, where Ron Paul is, you know, whipping butt out there, too. And this freedom, anti-war, peace thing is dominating, and it's going to be a radical change very soon. If it's not from economics, it'll be from something else. But I tell you, this war thing is not working. What do you see? I want to get your view of the future and how you see this is going to play out. Are we just going to go down in the dustbin of history as the empire implodes? Or are the people going to rise up and just find the love?
Well, I don't think we'll go down in the dustbin of history. The dustbin of the history shows that it's progressive politics that wins eventually. But I think you really, when you're talking about your logo there, that you understand that language matters, and language matters, and the people who dominate what's called dominate the discourse, who are able to, like you were saying, what is a win, right? Well, the people who are able to dominate the definition of a win, whatever that may be, are going to win. And the sooner people realize that the language that is used reflects meaning and really is a way of putting them to sleep and getting them to be quiescent, the sooner off, we'll have the kind of important changes that we're all looking for.
You know, the one thing that I realized, I really had an epiphany just a few months ago, is I understood that. I mean, I kind of operated this way anyway. It was, we got a connection problem there. We okay? Can you hear me? Are you all right?
Yes, I'm fine.
The one thing that I really started to understand, the term prevailing opinion. Now, they don't use it as much now as they used to when I was younger. You know, prevailing opinion says prevailing opinion. I'm going, oh, prevailing opinion is the opinion which prevails. Where? I don't know, the mind of the people and the media and the sitcoms and the movies, whatever. Prevailing opinion. Well, then I started to understand, yeah, that's what we do. You know, we're making sure that our opinion prevails. What is that opinion? Little simple things like love, not war. You know, how about that? Let's go give peace a chance. All you need is love. You know, I just, you know, these are powerful things. That's one reason why, you know, geniuses like John Lennon are targeted so much, because he understood. He understood this is a psyop. This is a psychological operation to turn us into a confused mass. If they can't convince you, at least they can confuse you or convince you that your neighbors don't know any better. Oh, yeah, I know, but my neighbors are the dumb ones that voted for fill in the blank. Well, it doesn't matter if you control the election computers and whatever, you know, candidate happens to be up there. You may choose from fascist candidate A or communist candidate B. Oh, yay. Then you have something like Dr. Paul come in, and all of a sudden, it's a game changer. They're understanding that people are starting to understand that their government does not represent them. Even the system doesn't represent them. And then we have people like Bo Grosskopf coming out, writing a book. Tell us about the book. Tell us why somebody should go out and buy your book, Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. What are they going to learn from your book?
Well, what they're going to learn is the true meaning of shock and awe. And I, you know, that language was chosen on purpose, by the way, in terms of what the Pentagon was going to do initially before the ground troops went in. And if you remember, shock and awe has sort of been made fun of. Everything can be shock and awed now, whether it be whatever it might be. It became the joke of late night television, and even make toys now using the concept shock and awe. But what my book does is uncover the reality of shock and awe, that the claim made by the bombing nations, as I call them, of we're now fighting clean wars for everybody is really pretty clean only for the bombers and very dirty for people on the ground. And we're, you know, that's really, and the reason of why, and the reason how dirty it is, and reason why, to go back to your point, why is there blowback? Why is it, why do people hate us? Why do people do the things like 9/11? Well, it's because, as others have said, you know, for the first time in 200 years, the guns were pointed in the other direction. And it does document the, you know, the history and the rationale and the theory behind it, that, and the devaluation of other people around the world in the name of very strong and powerful economic and corporate interests in this country.
You know, this is one thing, you know, this kind of education that people should be getting. When you climb, a pilot comes in, he lands at the base, and he climbs out of his A-10. You know, there's no blood on the muzzle of his chain gun. You know, he doesn't have something splattered in his face. You know, the pimple-faced kid that comes out of Langley getting out of his Predator little simulation chair kind of thing as he sent Hellfire missiles into wedding parties, you know, he's heading over to Taco Bell. You know, this stuff is we got to get the images of what's really happening, and they're doing their best to censor it. Well, there's something that we can do, and we will talk about it when we come back here and Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Bo, I got you there?
Yes, you do.
There you go. Did you hear the question?
No, I didn't.
Okay, we are going... Yeah, I guess he had a button pushed wrong there, but we get you taken care of. We have been active, doing a lot of activities. We have been injecting the love into this love-illusion that's coming as best we can. My thing is what can we do aside from, I mean, is voting it? Once every 2 years we go in there and we push a button? Is that it? You know, I mean, is voting the answer? Is voting going to make us free? Is voting going to bring peace? I mean, what are you suggesting that we do?
Well, voting is important, but it's also necessary to understand that your only options to vote for are not the Democratic and Republican parties, that there are a multitude of parties with worthwhile agendas out there that you have an option to vote for. And don't buy into the notion that you're wasting your vote if you don't vote for the Demopublicans, my position. So voting is important, but, you know, the other thing is that the powers that be would just love it if all we did was vote and then every 2 years and then shut up. And I think it's important, and I think progressive forces in particular, and libertarian forces in particular, are taking up a strategy that says, you keep your voices loud, you keep them calm, but you keep them loud, and you push the people you voted for, who didn't vote for, you push them in the direction that you want them to go in. And it is the role of a citizen in this country, particularly a democratic society, the role of a citizen is to keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and don't just let them do what they want to do, because that's what they love. They love people to vote and then go away.
You know, I get the impression that they, you know, it's kind of like Rock the Vote with MTV kind of deal. And all the programs by government, oh, gotta get out there and vote, get out there and vote, get out there and vote. When I'm like, you know, they're going to touch screens that aren't, you can't check them, you can't do it, you know, and it's just like they want legitimacy of whatever. Yeah, see, you had a chance to vote. Yeah, on that, seriously, that's my voice, that was it, that's all I get to do. Then you go out and complain, oh, I'm sorry, didn't you know you got to go stand in your free speech zone? And then, oh, you're on a no-fly list. Oh, and you don't get habeas corpus. Oh, and you're an enemy combatant. Oh, we're going to send you to Guantanamo, get no lawyer. I mean, you see where I'm going here? At what point do you finally, you know, I mean, I advocate the love, because I'm telling you, it's not more than Gandhi saw pacifism as a philosophy, he saw it as a tactic. You know, let them demonstrate how scummy they are. Let them demonstrate how jackbooty they are. Let them, because people need to see what they are, what they really are. But some people got to suffer. Some people got to die. Some people got to be maimed. Some people got to be incarcerated. Some people, you know, and who's the first one to lay down and sacrifice? Well, I tell you who it is. It's people just like the 13-year-old that's strapping on because they saw their parents and their family blown up in front of them. It's a mom that has, you know, a dead Iraq veteran. It has people that have had friends die in their arms, blown the bottom part of their body, blown as they bled out in front of them. It's people, and they're creating these people, and they're surprised that they have opposition. And then when you do it peacefully, I'm like, oh, heck no, you can't do it. You're being effective. Or they want to generate controversy. They need to have, you know, militias go in there so they can rise up in a state against a militia that's doing. So I can just see it's all this propaganda that's swirling around, and we're looking for a kernel of truth. Where is the truth? And I ask you, Bo, I'm looking for some truth. Can you give me just a sentence or a paragraph of what's the truth? I mean, what are we looking for in our place in this world?
Well, as I start my radio show off every time by saying, here we are insisting on resisting. And I think, you know, in terms of just a statement, that is the essence. I mean, it is horrible that people feel like they need to strap on those bombs and commit suicide, or they feel like they can, or that someone can convince them to do that. That just, but there's a lot of activity, a lot of things that other people can do. If someone says we have a free speech area and you must stay there, I'm sorry, the United States of America is a free speech area. And so people have got to stand up and object. You know, and they've got to insist on resisting, regardless of the consequences. And the more people will do that, the lesser the consequences, and the lesser we will get closer to what you're calling the truth.
Hey, you know, I'll let you promo your radio show. I didn't know you were on the radio. Go ahead, man. Tell them where they can get a hold of you.
Well, we're streamed at KZFR in Chico, California. It's community radio, and I am the co-host of Peace and Social Justice Show every Friday from 11:30 to 1.
Peace and Social Justice sounds like a little bit from the left. Tell me your philosophy, man. I mean, what are you hoping to accomplish? If you had your ideal presidential candidate getting in there, I would imagine it'd be, you know, let's not bomb people. But, I mean, of course, you know, what do you advocate? I'll give you, you know, I appreciate you coming on the show. Give your spiel.
Well, I always vote for the Peace and Freedom Party, because I don't know how you can't vote against, how you cannot vote for peace and not vote for peace and freedom.
By having a government computer, that's how.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at their agenda, you know, they're very much in favor of labor rights. They're very much in favor of issues of working class people and middle class people, and promoting the notions of freedom and everybody having equal opportunity, and not only equal opportunity, but equal equality of condition. So, yes, I'm a person of the left.
Well, you know, I certainly equal opportunity and equal conditions is based upon individual effort. So we've got to get that libertarian thing going on there. But I tell you, where we overlap is, can we give peace a chance? What the heck? I give that a shot. Let's go ahead and give it what for. Because I'm telling you, I already know where this ends. And it is a decline of living standard. It is a collapse of the economy. The dollar is gone. We have, and it's not about fixing the system as it is now. It's about surviving it. And what do we do after? And I'm just, you know, a lot of people advocate, you know, if we just go back to the Constitution, I'm going, well, it didn't protect us this time. You know, what do we place it with? I don't know. But, you know, Declaration, that's why it's Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. Because the Declaration of Independence was very clear. If you have a government that is, it's supposed, the only reason, your justification you have for a government is defense of individual rights. When it doesn't do that, then what are you supposed to do? Alter or abolish it? It's your right. It's your duty. So I'm going, it's not doing it. It's not, it's so not doing it. I haven't been doing it for a long time. What do you replace it with? I don't know. We can, you know, reboot what we got, and then eventually the same thing will happen. But I'm just, I don't know. We need to think about it, because I'm telling you, what we have now is not working to the point that it will collapse. What happens now is a truth understanding of the American people, so that prevailing opinion is freedom's the answer. What's the freaking question? So we need to have freedom, so we are allowed to love our neighbor, so we are allowed to be able to help them when they need it, without somebody putting a gun to our head and extracting from us and redistributing it. And I'm going, that evil, that violence, that initiation of force is how we get to where we are right now. How do you think we're being perceived around the world? I mean, is there anybody that's loving America other than the dictators that are getting our foreign aid? I mean, you know, who is it? We have anybody on our side as far as the general population? Or what do you feel about that?
I think it's pretty well documented, Ernest, that people around the world care an awful lot about the American people and this thing called the United States of America, but they don't like what our government is doing. And I think that's just so well documented. There are some people who are anti-Americans and whatever that might be on a personal level. But politically, that distinction between us and the people's feelings about us as a people and then what our government does is pretty strong.
Well, I'm hoping that our actions as a people, as we're rising up with love and daisies and gun barrels, that we're demonstrating enough to the rest of the world that, you know, maybe you shouldn't just nuke us out of existence. It's not us. We have been occupied as much as they have been. You know, you think an IRS agent with the full force and power of the federal government coming after people for, you know, Lord knows what, is any different than what they have to deal with? You know, just because we got, you know, guys with shiny ties that are abusing us is no different than, you know, Central American, you know, death squads. So I'm just going, this is humanity is demanding the social justice that we always demand. It's just how you get it. And you don't get it with a, you know, wearing the ring of power. You take the power and you throw it in the fires of Mordor. You go, look, I don't want to be a master of slaves, and I don't want to be a slave. You know, I just want to be left alone. There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. And I think, Bo, you're a just want to leave people alone guy, I would imagine. Thank you, Bo. Bo, you know, thank you for coming on Strategic Terror, the politics and ethics of aerial bombardment. Bo Grosskopf, you the man. Thanks for coming on. We'll be right back next hour about the Southern Republican Leadership Conference with Ron Paul. We'll be right back.